Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast. All right, here we are, episode 151
of the Nasty Cast. But I'm really tired. I've been awake forever, and I hate to interrupt you. Actually, I relish interrupting you, but I do have a story to tell, and I'm going to tell it right here. So,
I relish, by the way.
I hate relish. Pickles? What the f*** even is relish? I'm bleeping that myself. It's pickles and like mayonnaise and whatever else is jammed in this blender of nastiness. So
what
do you actually have against it?
Pickles? You don't put them in your beer. You don't like relish. Just go to get out of America, buddy.
See, I like pickles, but I'm not really a relish fan either. So as odd as that is, yeah.
I'm absolutely pulling out that soundbite file. Get out of America, buddy. Like, that was so North Dakotan. Okay, we have a long episode. We're not at all recording this first because we don't do that. So I'm going to tell my story. So before we started recording tonight, I took a nap. And no joke, I was probably awake for like 35 straight hours. So I took a two-hour nap. In that two-hour period, my brain likes to do really weird things. And I had a dream that you guys are familiar with the Hamburger Helper. The food byproduct. I'm sure you are, Nate.
That's white people food.
So, I mean, that's North Dakota right there.
You have it all the time.
It's pretty good. I like it. Although I use turkey because it's better for you. Anyway, I had a dream that the Hamburger Helper mascot, which is just that little hand with a face on it, that his first name was Muhammad. And here's the thing about that. That's white people food. If his first name were Muhammad, can you imagine the uproar that would cause in like the southern white people community? Like people would lose their minds. They'd be like, we ain't taking this Islam business here with our Hamburger Helper. And anyway, that's just what my brain said. Hey, you need to know about this. We're going to name him Muhammad.
Okay. So have I told you guys the KFC guy story?
No.
Okay, so this is to piggyback off that. I was probably like 8 years old or something like that when I had this nightmare. But okay, so if you envision at least the old KFC logo, like you've got the picture of Colonel Sanders' big dumb head, and then he's got that tie where it's like, you know, it's got the bow tie with like the long strands on the bottom.
Oh my gosh,
you know?
We have talked about this bolo tie because I remember having this discussion.
Okay,
but
yeah,
finish the story.
Ties.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the tie, like the two side, the parts on his, you know, that went out to the side were his arms, and then the bottom parts were his legs. Like that was his body. And so his giant head was running around chasing me around my grandmother's house saying, I want Kentucky Fried Children.
Between him and Muhammad, we've got some terrifying mascots.
Man.
Yeah, so terrifying start to episode 151 of the Nasty Cast. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. The pickle hater over there is Van Lee. You can find him at Manly Van Lee. And Ron is just an all-around nice guy. You can find him at The Real Made.
Ron never eats.
It's true.
Sometimes. I eat sometimes. Real quick, since we're on this topic of condiments and eating, I'd like to know, you know, because we talked about this guy, or I should say we will talk about this guy later on. Are you guys familiar with the thing that Heinz is coming up with possibly called the mayo chip?
No.
The mayonnaise and ketchup hybrid?
Ew.
Okay, so that leads me to the question, which hybrid would you rather dip your fries in? Would you rather use Franchi or the mayo chip?
Franchi, that question.
Okay.
Yeah, no hesitation.
Okay.
Franchi.
I agree.
That's like a European thing, is people dip their fries in mayo.
Well, see, I didn't read it enough. I don't know if it's like a hoax thing or they're actually considering doing this, but I think the gist I got is someone suggested this online and it started out as a joke and they're maybe actually thinking about doing this. So
I think we'll have to ask our buddy Barry Baker out there if he does the dips his fries in the mayo.
But that's not up in Canada where they do the poutine, whatever that is.
Oh, that's so good.
But isn't that just fries with a bunch of just stuff on it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's fries like with brown gravy on it and cheese curds.
That's horrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's no gravy.
Delicious. It's one of my favorite things on planet Earth. I mean, I do reside in South Canada, basically. North Dakota is South Canada. So close enough. But I do love me some poutine. No, that's one thing that I leave the pickles off of. What's your favorite snack food? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also email us NastyTracksPods@gmail.com. And if you leave us a nice rate and review on iTunes, we will shout you out and love you for a long time. You can also donate to our Patreon, patreon.com/nastypod. If you like the show, you think we deserve a buck or two every month. I believe this week we have the new feed rolling, correct, Ben?
That's always a big question mark. Josh has been sick. He's one of our wunderkinds at Fantrax. Hopefully he'll get the kinks ironed out. If not, I will be posting this on our old feed as well, just in case. So you'll be able to find us, is a short answer. But if he gets the kinks worked out, yes, we'll be on Fantrax as well.
Okay, so the ads are going away, so be patient with us. Also listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which we also do. We'll be recording here quite shortly. We have a lot to talk about there. On today's show, however, we, of course, welcome Eric Cross, who works with us at Fantrax HQ, does a ton of work there, and he also contributes to Fantasy Pros. So we go over a whole bunch of stuff. We got a bunch of devastating, depressing injuries. We go over some bullpens. We play a little fun with numbers game called Premature Extrapolation, which is a very good time. We also look at some cold cuts, some guys who have started cold very very quickly out of the gate, and decide whether we're going to actually cut them from our roster already. And we're also going to be taking a look at some potential waiver wire pickups. So we'll get to that in just a second. But before we head to our break, we'll go ahead and get our plugs out of the way. Van, what do you got coming out this week?
I just wrote a piece that came out today that I completely botched because, again, sleep deprivation is rough. I completely forgot that Eloy Jimenez was traded to the other Chicago team, so I fixed that. But short answer is I was just looking up, and honestly, it didn't even change his timeline. I was looking at prospects and when I expect them to be called up, and that's basically just because, obviously, we haven't seen Acuna yet. And just to give it away, he's a big part of the article, but I really don't foresee him coming up until at the end of the month at the earliest, just because I think they want him to go on an extended streak. And we just heard the news that Freddie Freeman got hit on the wrist. So if he's out for an extended period, I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have Acuna come up and potentially struggle and harm his psyche, I guess. So anyway, I just don't think he's coming up towards until the end of the month at the earliest. But there are some other prospects I look at in there, including Eloy Jimenez, Nick Senzel, who I don't think comes up this year until much, much later because it just doesn't make any sense for the Reds to do. But anyway, check that out. Fantrax HQ, I also do the other podcast, which we'll record shortly. And then I also do the Launch Angle podcast with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. You can find that up now, I believe, or up tomorrow. Whenever you're listening to this, I'm sure it's up. So take a look at that one as well.
Very good. Yeah, and I wanted to mention, too, that it's quite the day to write about Eloy because I believe he just the White Sox cut ties with Courtney Hawkins, their former first round pick. And so I believe Eloy was headed to AAA. I saw that come across my Twitter feed today. So a lot of Eloy action going on. So sounds like a hot take on Senzel. So go give that a click on Fantrax HQ. Van again. No, let's go to
so
Ron.
So I'm
instead.
Writing about.
What about you, Ron?
I got the Fantastics player analysis tomorrow night. So that'll be up Friday. And then a little light on the baseball writing nowadays. I'm going to get a couple things maybe going later on in the season. But as of right now, the other thing I have going on other than the Fantrax Dynasty Pod with you dashing gentlemen is another dashing gentleman, Bob Lung, and I are doing the consistency football show every week. And so we talked about running backs this last Sunday. That is up. You can catch that on Spreaker. And then we're going to be doing running backs part two coming up this next weekend. And then on a side note, the hamburger helper's name is Lefty, in case you were wondering.
No, so, he has a name and it's Lefty. Mohammed Lefty. What a weird name.
Yeah.
Lefty Mohammed, either way.
Yeah. So
interesting. Way to not even plug the podcast that you guys spotted on, Ron. Jeez, our buddy, Bubba Andrikin had you on bench with Bubba.
Yeah, I did. I'm glad you brought that up. See, that's my first guest on a pod, so maybe I'm just not used to doing that. But yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that with Bubba. And if you do, on a side note, I am extremely glad you brought that up, because if you catch it on YouTube, I was unaware of the fact that I was I did not have my camera angled correctly. So if you do watch on YouTube, you get to stare at the top of my bald dome for a good 45, 50 minutes. So it's a good time.
Okay, I posit the question then, which is better, looking at that or looking at that sombrero picture every time Nathan talked on the Bench with Bubba podcast?
See, if I had no idea. He never mentioned to me once. I've been on that show two or three times now, and he's never once mentioned that, like, he does the YouTube thing and that if I actually turn my camera on, then people will see it. I've just never turned it on because I don't want to, I don't know, show off my face to the.
You don't want to create a frenzy with the ladies, you know, hitting you up on Twitter and.
Yeah, well, that's not even the case because I didn't think anybody would be seeing me, so I just turned it off. But if I knew that my face could be seen by millions of people across the great YouTube, then I would have turned it on. So I know that for next time.
At some point soon, because I have some cool props I want to put in the background. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Have somebody walking behind you randomly.
I got some ideas.
It's just you, like, have you seen my beach ball? I think it was over there, and you're just flexing a lot.
I was thinking more along the lines of, like, a dog is walking on the ceiling behind you, like upside down or something. But anyway,
I can get my dog to do that. He's pretty creative, so.
All right, so on Fantrax HQ, I have my Fire and Ice coming out. Every week, and of course, on Razzball 2, I'm doing Two Start at Palooza. So if you are looking for Two Start streamers, look no further than Razzball. And I'm going to also be doing an interesting sort of Commissioner's Corner type of segment there with all the, kind of ethics-related stuff there. So if you got anything Commissioner-related or transaction-related, anything like that, go ahead and tweet at me at Nathan Duckin if you want me to discuss it over there.
I've got
so
one.
So with that, what's that?
At the beginning of the season, there was this trade that
I think
made.
I know what this is going to be.
All right. We're going to take a break here and bring on Eric Cross. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry.
Be nasty. Don't worry. Be nasty.
All right, joining
us now.
You
can't even handle this. It's a mess already.
Oh, I don't know what's gotten into me tonight. I'm feeling a little wonky. Maybe I should have stayed up for 35 straight hours and I feel a little more normal.
Are you drinking pickle beer?
I'm not.
Have you enjoyed a pickle beer from the out of the Twin Stein yet?
No, I'm saving that for a special occasion. Okay, I'm trying your stupid 16-8 diet right now and it
okay.
Blows ass, by the way. So thanks a lot for ruining my life.
Don't.
Well, you can do it. I fasted for 24 hours yesterday. So
exactly. Don't listen to Ron. He's like, oh, I just don't eat for long periods of time, and I'm jacked. So I don't understand how any of this works.
Yeah, clearly Ron is doing something right. So I decided to actually listen to him. Turns out life is hell when you do that.
I'll tell you what, though, after you do it for a few days, it makes you appreciate your lunch so much more.
I'm going to eat right now just to spite you. That's how this is going to work.
Yeah, I ate today. I'm good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I've got Dots Pretzels just eyeing me. Okay, here we go. All right, and joining us now on the NastyCast, you know him from Fantrax.com, obviously, Fantrax HQ, as well as Fantasy Pros. It is gracing us once again with his presence, the great Eric Cross. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's good to have you back. Of course, obviously, we had you pretty recently on the mock draft episode, mm-hmm. which was a good time. So it was good to hear your voice there. And you were a pretty big fan of that team, if I remember correctly. How are your other teams doing so far? How many leagues you got going?
Let's see. I got, I think, 9 leagues, if I recall right. Most are going pretty well, except for the TGFBI. That team is kind of, everyone on my team is slumping at the same time, so it's great of them to do that. Had the first pick in that draft, so I took Trout, but I hated the rest of the way. I hated that. I missed out on a lot of runs, so I still think there's some promise on that team, but not looking good so far.
I hear you. That's been my toughest league so far as well. Had Turner hit the DL. Justin Turner shortly after I drafted him, and Delano DeShields. Although, good news on him, it sounds like he's going to be making it back actually fairly shortly. I heard that he might even return this weekend,
Sunday,
which is ridiculous. So Yeah, that's really good news, especially considering Byron Buxton just hit the DL, because obviously one steel source going out, you need another one coming back. So hopefully that fixes itself. Although, you know what pisses me off is, like, in weekly transaction leagues like that, guys always hit the DL on Monday or Tuesday for me. Like, I just picked up Matt Duffy in a league to replace Miguel Andujar, third base, who had been doing nothing. And, of course, like, he got one plate appearance, and now he's on the disabled list, and there's nothing I can do for the rest of the week. Drives me nuts.
It was real.
Oh my God. Yeah. So that's why I like daily leagues so much better. But anyway, I suppose we got a lot to get to, so we might as well hop on into the news here. Speaking of injuries, we're going to start off with Kevin Kiermaier. He is out for 8 to 12 weeks after undergoing finger surgery. So we'll throw it to you first here, Eric. You picking up Alex Smith at all? And if so, what kind of leagues are you looking at? Like, what kind of league depth?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Alex. Actually, I included him in my waiver wire piece that dropped last Friday. Love his speed. He has speed that could be an asset. Full season, he has 40-plus steal potential. He's already got a couple this year. He's been caught three times, but, you know, he's getting the green light, which is always good to see. Not much power, but he's hitting .383 right now. He's third in the major leagues. I know it's small sample size, but... he can do a little bit with the stick as well. So, anything 12 leagues or deeper, I'm looking at him. Looks like he'll get some good playing time going forward with Kiermaier out for the next couple of months. Looks like he was going to get some pretty good playing time before that. So, should be locked into an everyday role here going forward. So, I'm definitely looking at him going forward here in basically anything outside of like really shallow 10 team or less leagues.
Very good. All right. Van, what about you? You got any other injury fill-ins for Kiermaier?
Oh, boy. In the outfield, I'm sure there's plenty, but I didn't even look up that because I wanted to talk about Malik Smith. So take that. Thanks for taking that away from me. leading us right off here.
If it makes you feel better, I have some. So you go ahead and talk about Malik Smith. Everybody knows I like Malik Smith because I'm a Rays fan. So you Homer. Take that, and then I'll take the replacements.
Very good. Well, what I'll say is, are we done with Kevin Kiermaier, at least for the most part? I mean, I'm sick of this. He's obviously, these are kind of fluky injuries, but he was really underperforming at the major league level prior to the injury here. So, I mean... this is the first year I've actually owned a couple of shares of him, and I was pretty disappointed with what I saw. I think there's still some potential here, but until the cost really backs off a lot, and I don't know if that's going to be the case. We'll just have to see once he comes back and, you know, maybe what his trade value is. But until that drops, I think I'm pretty much just out on Kiermaier. But Malik, I've picked up in a few leagues. I'm really happy about it. The good thing about him is he's one of these little speedsters that can also walk, which is nice to see because you've got your Billy Hamiltons who can't walk, and that's frustrating. So if you can take a walk, get on base, and steal, great. You're going to be set up, and you're going to get the statistics you need. And he stole a base today for several of my teams, so I'm pretty happy with that one.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I've liked Malik Smith since he was on the Braves as well, and he's performed when he's gotten chances. He did this last year in basically the same scenario as we have now. So depending upon how deep your league is, there's a few guys out there outfield-wise. Obviously, you're not going to just go and pluck steals right off the waiver wire. And I'm going off fan tracks here. So you've got a couple guys around that 50% mark. Derek Dietrich's a guy that's out there that's 53%. I'll talk about him a little bit later as well. Guy that had a hell of a day today and is on fire after getting the call up is Teoscar Hernandez. Somehow he is 47% owned in Fantrax leagues. I'd look for that to change pretty rapidly, especially after today, if he's not already on some people's waiver claim list, which I'm sure he is. Another guy that I'm going to throw out there as well, if you are looking for some cheap steals, I actually got him in the Dynasty League last night for a measly fourth round pick, which he's going to steal some bases and not much else. And that's Cameron Maben. Not ultra excited about it, but I need some swipes in that league, and if he can get me 20-25, I'll take that. And then a couple other guys real quick. Another guy that I never thought I would say that I'd be excited about adding or ever give anyone this piece of advice, but since he's hitting at the top of this lineup, and he will be until Daniel Murphy comes back, Howie Kendrick's the guy that's out there. Now, he's not going to probably steal you any bases. He is hitting over .300. He has a couple of bombs, and he's hitting at the top of a nice lineup, so... he's somebody you might throw a dart at. And last but not least, as long as he's getting some at-bats, He's got a little bit of multi-position eligibility, and that's Tyler Austin for the Yankees, as long as the Yankees can get their offense going. But he's a guy that's gotten pretty decent chance. He's hitting 262, got a couple homers, has a steal. He might get you a few steals here and there, but there's just not a lot of speed to be plucked off of waivers.
Hopefully Tyler Austin doesn't get in too many more brawls so he can be on the field. Mean right hook. But Van, I'll go ahead and give you the nod since I cheated you out of talking about Malik Smith. But Teoscar Hernandez has been your boy. So with Josh Donaldson going to the DL due to a deceased arm, Teoscar Hernandez has been called up. So go ahead and gloat about your boy. What do you think he's going to give us this year?
Well, I'm pretty excited. I mean, obviously, he's got plenty of power. I think there's potential there to actually hit for a decent average. He can hopefully take some walks. I mean, he generally hovers around that 6-7% rate. If that stays there, I'll be pretty happy with what I get, particularly if he can hit closer to 300. But in OBP leagues, maybe you ding him slightly. There is a little bit of speed as well, which is nice to see. In 2017, he stole 16 bases through his probably 600 plate appearances to go along with the 26 homers. So a lot of talent in this guy. I was initially kind of worried when they called him up that they just weren't going to play him. Like he was just going to be your fourth outfielder and you weren't going to get a whole lot of looks. In fact, I traded him in a league that I'm kind of sad I traded him so early because he's been called up because I didn't expect it. I really thought they were going to stick with what they have. But Randall Grichuk is batting like 0.045, so I think the leash is going to be kind of slim with him too. So definitely Teoscar is a guy to look at, and if he's on your waiver wire list or he's out there, pick him up. I mean, I would probably spend, I don't know, 20-25% of my fab on a guy like this because he could be a real impact player. So if he's still out there, definitely take a look at him for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Van, there. I've been a big fan of Teoscar Hernandez too, and I was really bumming to it, you know, going in the middle of the winter. You're looking at this Toronto outfield and like, all right, you got Kevin Pillar in center field. That's not going to change. And I was really excited to see what Hernandez and Anthony Alford could do in this outfield. And then they just go and trade for Grichuk and sign Curtis Granderson for some odd reason. Which made no sense to me. Still doesn't. But and you said that you mentioned the 16 steals last year. I think there's even a little more. You look at previous years before that, I think he had three or four straight 30-plus steal seasons before that. So I think maybe even, outside shot at 2020 this year, if Toronto keeps playing them, which they should. I'm not sure if they're going to here, but, definitely strikes out a little bit. So I'm not sure how high of an average he'll hit for. I think at least, 250 is reasonable, 250 through 75 in that range, which is not too bad once you factor in that power and speed, but definitely a guy. I echo you on Hernandez. Really like him going forward.
Yeah. No,
what about Josh Donaldson?
Throw back to me because I kind of talked about him a little bit ago. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about him. It's just a matter of playing time. It's just a matter of, like Eric said, it's all these odd outfield signings that they had, and I don't really understand, why you bring in Curtis Granderson and why, Randall Grichuk had a pretty nice night last night, but beyond that, he's not done much. So.
Well, and retroactively, it makes sense for the Jays to have signed Granderson because Alford is just so injury prone. He's injured right now. That's been the case with him throughout every year of the minors. And so as much as I love that guy, he just can't stay on the field. And so to bring in some pretty cheap veteran presence like that, gives them a little bit of stability. Josh Donaldson, you hate to see that. It sounds like he's going to need more than the lowest amount of time, the 10 days on the disabled list, to revitalize his arm. I don't know if he's getting a new bionic arm attached. I don't know if anybody's seen. Oh, what's that show on Netflix? Good Lord. Altered Carbon, where there's like this lady gets a bionic arm. It's freaking sweet. Anyway, good show. But so maybe Josh Donaldson needs that. I'm not overall too worried about him the rest of the season. Once he comes back, hopefully his arm is okay. But otherwise, I think he'll hit just fine. Jonathan Scope, moving on to some more unfortunate news. He's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. And Josh Harrison is also going to be out another 4 to 6 weeks. So we're scrambling for some second base replacements. Eric, who do you have lined up for us?
I got a few guys here. And one, I think it was Ron that mentioned him. Howie Kendrick was a guy I like too. Should be second base eligible in most leagues. He's filling in there. Just not a guy that's going to hurt you. He doesn't have one standout tool, but he'll get you a little power, maybe chip a few steals here and there. Usually hit for a good average. So he's a guy I look to guy down in Florida here, Starlin Castro, is a very underrated player. Yeah, that team is absolute hot garbage. You know, but he's hitting in the middle of that lineup. Always, you know, usually hits for a good average. I don't think he's hit a home run yet, but, you know, he's always should be good for about 15 to 20 this season with, I don't know how many runs and RBIs you're going to get in that lineup, even out of the three hole, but, you know, he figures 70 plus. So he's a very underrated player. I think he's owned in right around 50 to 60% of Fantrax league. So, should be available, if you want him. And then a couple other guys here I got that give you a little bit of speed. Got a Kettle Marte, Jose Peraza, Chris Owings. I said not much power for any of them, but, you know, won't hurt you in the batting average department, and get you a little bit of speed, too.
Yeah, and a couple of names you tossed out I liked. Howie Kendrick was one of them. Starlin Castro, you're right, he hasn't hit a home run yet this year, but the slash numbers look okay, minus the power, 293, 46, 319. He's going to provide some value. He's currently, I think, 21st. On the Fangraphs war rankings as far as second baseman. Guy I wanted to bring up, not because I think you should pick him up on your team, but because I think it's fascinating, is a guy for the Rangers named Isaiah Kiner Falefa.
Yeah.
Combined with Austin Beben Dirks from a few years ago, it's clear that the Rangers have like an AI in their back office that is creating fake baseball players, but also doesn't know how to make names, because this is just bizarre ass names that we're getting from some of these guys. Avoid him in most of your leagues, but definitely look at his name. You know, we've seen Yoan Moncada kind of come alive over the last couple of days, so maybe there's some life there. If the owner kind of cut bait on him, there's some power and speed potential. Homered and stole a base, I think, 2 days in a row now. I know he did it again today. So anyway, it's worth taking a look and seeing who's on your waiver wire and see if you can pick up a couple of these guys. But I definitely like some of the names you mentioned. Also, Ketel Marte hasn't done a whole lot, but I still have faith that he's going to put up a solid season for the Diamondbacks, too.
Yeah, Howie Kendrick, again, I had him. Another guy that I went a little bit deeper as far as some leagues, another guy that's got multi-position eligibility hitting in that Washington lineup is Wilmer Defoe. Hitting 256, he's got a couple swipes, not going to get you any homers, but he should score a few runs. He should steal a few bags in there, here and there, as long as he's in the lineup. Another guy that is all about, it must be something about this second base position that these guys are eligible a million places, and that's our guy, the German sensation, Zdeněk Dietrich in Florida.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, he hits the ball good, yeah. and how dare you, Eric Cross, call the team that just split in Yankee Stadium with the Yankees hot garbage?
Well, the Yankees are also hot garbage. I mean, we're already...
I was hoping you would say that. That was the point I was trying to make. So,
I'm a Red Sox fan, so I can rant.
You would say that anyway, so that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, exactly. Cool. Okay, so real quick with Derek Dietrich, what I did was, because I've thought about the schedule that they have played in the Marlins' favor, they've had a pretty rough schedule, and they've actually kind of been a little scrappy and not been as terrible as we thought they would be. Now, do I expect that to continue? Absolutely not. But I looked at the schedule they have coming up. They have a few games against Milwaukee and then LA. So in the short term, Derek Dietrich is going to face Chase Anderson, Yulish Chacin, Suter, Guerra, and then they move on to LA, Alex Wood, who's had some blowups, and then he finally faces a decent pitcher in Kenta Maeda later on. So he might be a nice pickup in the short term because he does have a few favorable matchups coming up, and he's at 53% owned in Fantrax leagues. I don't know if I said Wilmer Defoe is only about 16% owned, so he should be available in most leagues.
All right, moving on to some really bad news now. News is always terrible. We should just stop doing this segment. It's all injuries. So at the time of the rundown when I sent this out, I said that Taiwan Walker is looking at potential Tommy John surgery. It is now confirmed. And then Denelson Lamet has also undergone Tommy John surgery. Not sure there's really a lot of actionable stuff going on. We're going to talk about some starting pitchers that are sort of streamable on the waiver wires as far as guys that you can plug in and fill in with their spots. So if anybody really has anything that they wanted to say on either of those guys, go ahead and interject now. Otherwise, we'll move on to bullpens.
One thing I do want to point out is that one thing I forget is that Taiwan Walker's only 25 years old. So this is not quite as devastating as I thought. I felt he was 28, 29 just in my mind. So I think he still has a ton of value going forward. We'll see him in a couple of years when he's 27 and see what he can do. Hopefully he comes back well from the surgery. I was high on him this year. I was high on him last year, and I liked what I saw. So it's kind of disappointing. But again, young age surprised me. So it's nice that he's at least got some potential career left in him after this.
Yeah, and one thing I'd want to just quickly put in here, in Arizona, he's not quite ready for a call-up, but he should be ready later on this season. This John Duplantier, Diamondbacks pitching prospect, very good one, top 100 prospect, hasn't had an ERA over 2 yet. So he won't be ready quite yet, but just a name to keep an eye on later this year. Huge strikeout potential. Doesn't walk many guys either, so just need to keep in the back of the mind for later this season.
Yeah, I love Duplantier. So let's move on to bullpens then. Let's start off with the White Sox, and we will give you the honors first, Eric. What the heck is going on at the back end of the White Sox bullpen?
Yeah, another team that's hot mess here. this team is like, I was looking at their bullpen stats, and basically everybody in this bullpen has sucked except for Nate Jones so far. You know, Minaya completely imploded and walked like 100 guys his first outing. Now he's down, toiling down AAA. And Jones, you know, like I say, he's the only one that's really pitched well, but you know, he's also never been, doesn't have much closing experience. He's mostly a middle relief setup guy. So who knows how much they trust him in as a closer, if they even do. But God, there's nobody here. You know, I kind of liked Soria a little bit going into the season just because he had the experience from, his days with the Kansas City Royals. But he hasn't been, really that bad. He's got 8 Ks in 5 innings. But, he's, been very up and down throughout his career. But, God, there's nobody in this bullpen that I trust right now, honestly. Even Nate Jones. I'm not, rushing out to get Nate Jones on my roster. So this is a bullpen I'm totally staying away from right now.
I'm a little more in on Nate Jones just because when he does pitch, he's good. So I think he at least has that going for him. He does strike out a lot. The walks throughout his career have been okay, with the exception of last year's 11 and two-thirds innings. But of course, it's worth pointing out that this is a guy who's had basically Tommy John surgery, an operation on his back, surgery to reposition the nerves in his throwing elbow, all kinds of stuff. I was reading about this earlier today, and obviously we just know he has health issues. So it's a bit of a risky bet in that regard. But if he truly is healthy, and through his 5 1/3 innings this season he's looked healthy, then I think you have a buyer's opportunity. Now, as long as the cost isn't insane, because we also don't know what the White Sox are going to do. They may stick with Soria. I think if Soria is healthy and producing and being good, that's probably best for the White Sox, because then maybe they can flip him at the deadline. So they want that to happen. I don't know that that does happen. So anyway, I think I'm going to put my bets on Nate Jones going forward. He got a save a couple of days ago, but I'm not that excited just because of the injury history.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to give Nate Jones the full go-ahead as far as the guy that's going to get the job. And I think that it plays out with both of them getting opportunities, because, Van, you kind of alluded to it a minute ago. I think it's just going to be kind of a showcase to maybe move to both of these guys at the deadline. I mean, they're both I think Nate Jones is 32. I thought I saw Soria is 33. So in terms of major leaguers and pitchers, they're getting a little bit up there, and they don't really fit exactly what the Sox are trying to do with the youth movement. And so if they can move them to a contender and get a couple of prospects, I think that's what they're going to try to do. And to kind of speak to the Nate Jones injury history, when you look at his numbers since 2014, you go down the line and you got 0, 19, 70.2, and then 11 and 2/3. And so basically that's his innings pitched in each season. And so every time it seems like he's ready to step up and take the job, and he shows that he has good stuff, it is something kind of strange and out of left field that he has a surgery on something. And so he just hasn't shown us enough. And so it's hard to trust him. I think if he's out there, though, if you're hard up for saves, I think you have to go after him. I think he is available in a lot of leagues, but it wouldn't surprise me if we really don't see a clear front runner here as far as this job. Now, if these two guys do leave town, there's really nobody else in this bullpen. I mean, somebody's going to have to get it by default, and I guess you're going to look at saves for there. But you got guys like Danny Farquhar, Bruce Rondon, and Chris Volstad in the bullpen there. So not really a whole lot of lights out closer options there after these two guys are out of town.
I invested in Joaquin Soria actually in quite a few leagues just because he was like free in drafts basically. You know, since obviously the White Sox were going to be a bad team and Nate Jones was kind of breathing down his throat at the end of spring training there. It looks like today they pitched Soria after Jones and the game went 14 freaking innings against the A's. But that usage, at least despite the recent save from Nate Jones, indicates to me that Soria is still the guy there for the time being. Obviously, he's been dusted up a little bit in the early going. So who knows if he can, you know, hang on to that job really strongly. But for the time being, I'm going to stick with Joaquin Soria. Let's see. What do we got next? L.A. Keaton Middleton, Eric. Is he the guy who we want moving forward for the Angels?
He is, and I just realized today that his first name is not Kenyon, which I've been calling him Kenyon.
I thought that too for so long.
I looked it up, and I was doing a search for him, and I was typing in Kenyon, and nothing was coming up, and I was getting a little irritated. I'm like, why is he not coming up? And then I looked at something else. I'm like, oh, it's K-E-Y-N-A-N. So it's Keenan, not Kenan. Kenyon, like I've been calling him. But I think he is the guy going forward. You know, he's already got converted on all four of his save opportunities. Really pitching the best out of all the bullpen options there. Bedrosian and Parker have just been way too hittable so far. I think Parker's given up 11 hits and 8 1/3, and Bedrosian 10 and 6 2/3. Parker's walking a good amount of guys as well. So I do think Middleton's a guy going forward. He wasn't ever a big striker guy in the minor league, so he's another one of those failed starters turned reliever. But he's pitched well out of the bullpen so far in his career, and should be the guy. Another guy that always seems to factor in wherever he goes is Jim Johnson. He hasn't gotten a save up yet, but you know, if Middleton starts struggling, I won't be surprised if Johnson factors in. He always does.
Keenan Middleton is from Portland, Oregon. So way to be racist, guys. Kenyon Middleton. Come on. No.
It'd be so exotic.
He would be very exotic. I've watched virtually every Angels game this season, or at least the condensed versions of the games. And
that's how I like my soup.
Delicious. And too much salt, though. You got to worry about that. That sodium's bad for your heart. Because you're very salty. Keenan Middleton has, like Eric said, gone 4-for-4 in the save ops. I like him. I don't like him a ton. FIP and XFIP really are a bit more wary of him than his ERA presents. He's got a 0.93 ERA. Both the other metrics are above 3. Doesn't strike out that many batters. The walks are a little bit high. However, I think he can keep the job and hold it. In addition to that, we're still seeing the struggles of Cam Bedrosian and Blake Parker. Bedrosian, I'm going to write off. His velocity's down. I think there's something wrong there. So I don't want anything to do with him for the rest of the season. Parker, I think there's a chance that if he strings together a lot of really good innings and then Middleton falters, maybe he gets the job. But I think Keenan Middleton's earned a pretty good leash here. The one problem in all this is, of course, that Mike Scioscia is the guy deciding what goes on, and he's a psychopath. So we don't know what's going to happen. But as of right now, it's Keenan Middleton, and I'm all in for it. I like it.
What was it that Joe Pisapia called him? Mike Psycho Scioscia? I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I'd like to just say to Keenan Middleton, if you're listening, I've always pronounced your name Keenan, so I just want you to know that. Jim Johnson's the only other guy that I think I would maybe take a speculative ad on in a deep league. He's throwing fairly well. And you threw it on the list to look at Bedrosian and look at Blake Parker. Now, I know it's early. I know the sample size is small, but batters are hitting 345 off Bedrosian and 324 off of Blake Parker. So, and the whips are both 1.8, 1.92 respectively. So they've got to get that down a little bit. The only thing I don't like about Middleton, and Van, you kind of talked about it, is the 7-4 strikeout to walk ratio. I'd like to see him walking a few less guys in that 9 2/3 innings he's throwing. But everything else you have to like. He's 4-for-4 in save chances. The ERA is under 1, and so I think he's the guy that has the job for now. And if just keep the walks down a little bit, I think he's got a pretty good grasp on it. But Jim Johnson's a guy that it might add if I could.
All right. So Eric, what do you think? We're moving on to Houston here. Ken Giles seems to be a forgotten man. They don't like him there. So if you're a Giles owner, are you hanging on to him for hopes of better days?
I am for now. I've always kind of liked Ken Giles. I love, like, Chris Stavinsky too. Actually, I think I like Chris Stavinsky even more. But you know, if you have Ken Giles, I'm not cutting ties with him quite yet. Looks like he's still gonna be in the mix, I think, for save opportunities here. He should get you a good strikeout rates, and he was a guy going into the season that was drafted, you know, amongst one, you know, the top 10 closers off the board. So cut him, you know, 2.5 weeks into the season here. I think it's a little premature. But then again, I think going forward, I would rather have Devinsky. I think he's just a better pitcher, good control, good strikeout rate, and just seems, you know, good, really good for that role. So if I had to pick one, picking Devinsky, but also not totally writing off Giles quite yet.
I think if you drafted Giles, you need to stick with Giles. He's going to give you good ratios. I think he's a very good pitcher. But I also think these first couple of weeks have signaled a change in Houston where the manager's just decided he's going to do some of these weird things and just mix and match. So maybe the era of Ken Giles getting, you know, a potential 40 save season under his belt is gone. I think he's a 25 to 30 save guy. He probably leads the team in saves at the end of the season. But I also don't think that he really, you know, is an elite closer in the regards of receiving save opportunities. So it's worth owning all of these guys just because I think they're going to be mixed and matched and some are going to pick up saves here and there. Giles is still the guy for me if I'm going to pick one guy who's going to get the most saves. But I also really am going to knock him down quite a bit on my closer board just because he's not going to get the usage that you want out of him.
Yeah, they have a lot of and the Astros have done a really nice job as far as we know what their rotation is about, but we also know that they've put their bullpen together quite nicely, and they have a lot of movable pieces there that they can use. I wouldn't panic just yet on Ken Giles, but like you said, Nate, for some reason, it seems like they're looking for every alternative that they can come up with to kind of get him out of that role. I think it's kind of like an Archie Bradley situation with Devinsky. I think they like him in that role that he has, but I kind of feel like they have guys behind him as far as if Chris Devinsky steps into that closer role that they can kind of have as being those middle inning kind of swing starters if they need a sixth starter for some reason or if they need a guy to step up because of injury. And on a side note, I was, you know, as we do on this show, we tend to come up with some nicknames for guys. And so I'd like to kind of start the bandwagon here. If we can get the nickname for Brad Peacock going, if we can refer to him from now on as the Astrocock. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
I think we can really get some time behind this and get it going. Okay. All right, cool.
I've got a picture to send you guys too about Brad Peacock.
Oh god.
So yeah, just keep that in mind. That's coming to all of you and you're all gonna have to look at it.
I'm throwing my phone away right now.
Well, my eyes.
It's so white. I suddenly have a new favorite in that bullpen. It's the Astrocock. Suddenly I'm rooting for him hardcore, especially as a guy who's, I've never been into Giles. I'm just forever scarred by watching his spring training like 2 or 3 years ago or whatever, when he was just like, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with that fastball. He just had no idea where the pitch was going. And he's always struggled with command since then and control. So I've always kind of been turned off of him. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me after the implosion that we saw with him in the playoffs last year. They kind of are a little bit snake bitten going back to him in the late innings. So I think that just gives Devinsky even more value because he's going to be picking up the occasional save. He's not just going to be those elite strikeouts and ratios in the middle innings. But I wouldn't necessarily be cutting Giles. I think the time will come where they work him into more of a regular role. But it, like I said, it just makes Devinsky a little bit more valuable. And he actually has some similarities as far as that is concerned with the next bullpen we're going to talk about, a guy named Josh Hader, who has been awesome in Milwaukee and has been kind of a crap show ever since Corey Knebel went down with that injury. So, Eric, break it down for us. What the hell's going on in Milwaukee?
God, your guess is as good as mine. Yeah, you know, like I said, Hader is dominating. I just tweeted about him a little while ago. He has like a 19.3 Ks per nine. He struck out, I think, was it 25 guys in 11 and two-thirds innings. Only walked three. Only given up three hits. That fastball-slider combination is just absolutely filthy. He's not a guy kind of like in that Devinsky-Bradley role where, you know, he's almost too valuable just to have as the, you know, ninth-inning guy. And unlike, you know, the situation in Los Angeles where a lot of the guys aren't pitching well, that a lot of these guys are actually pitching rather, you know, rather well for the Brewers bullpen here. Your Barnes has a 150 ERA, Jeffress is at 0.9, Albers has what 2.16, so they actually, you know, they have a lot of decent options here. They just, and can't make up their mind who they want to go with here. I think Cater's gotten the last two save ops, and I think they're both two-inning saves, if my memory serves me correctly. So if he's out there floating on, he shouldn't be out there on your waiver wire. But if he is, you know, go at him just for the, you know, the ratios and the insane strikeout upside. But going forward, you know, I don't think there's going to be one guy that really separates himself and gets a bulk of the saves until Nebel's back. You know, my guy going into it, I liked Barnes initially, so I guess I'll stick with him as the. He's gotten four save ops here, converted on two of them. So I think he's going to be the guy that kind of maybe gets the most, but I don't think there's any one guy that's going to separate themselves here for saves until Nebel's back.
I don't have a whole lot to add to that. It's very Houston-esque in that Hader's probably the guy to own just because he's the best pitcher and because he is going to get you a few saves here and there. I think Barnes probably leads the team until Knable comes back, and then it's Knable. So that's basically how it's going to line up for me. But I think a lot of these guys already aren't owned. If you spend a lot of fab, you hope you did it on Josh Hader, because once Knable comes back, Hader's the only one who's going to retain a lot of this value.
Yeah, I think what happened is the Brewers bullpen has heard that the Rangers bullpen has been a topic on the NastyCast for like the last 25 weeks. And so I think they just wanted to be a topic of discussion. So I think they're trying to become the new Rangers and just trying to figure that out. But I think they've actually figured it out, because, you know, like Eric alluded to, Josh Hader's a real deal, man. When you look at his ratios, he's got 25 Ks to three walks, and that's in 11 and two-thirds innings, which is just insane. He's got a 0.51 whip. The only other guy that, in the meantime, until Knebel comes back, that I might speculate on if something happens to Hader, it would be Jeremy Jeffries, just because he has some closing experience. But other than that, not really a whole lot after Josh Hader that I'm going to target in this bullpen. But if you're able to get him in some way, shape, or form, if he's probably long gone, but if he's not, throw some money his way. Because even when, especially if it's save holds league, if Knebel gets a job back when he comes back, Hader's still going to be ultra valuable. Even though he's still going to get you those ratios, he can grab you some holds as well.
Now, Barnes actually went two innings today as he got the save, and so I don't think he's necessarily out of the picture yet. I would say that until Knebel gets back, he would probably be my choice to lead the team in saves, although he has been erratic so far. But as far as maybe the most valuable overall guy, I think that's definitely Hader. But we're going to go ahead and take a break here and come back with some fun with numbers, I guess we'll call it.
She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to
get nasty.
All right, Beck, you're on the Nasty Cast, and I totally cheated our listeners with not only an anecdote that is just so entertaining that I had to share it with everybody, but I totally skipped over a bullpen we're going to talk about. That's the St. Louis Cardinals. It's been Bud Norris getting the save so far instead of Greg Holland, who has been less than stellar so far since he's been brought up to the majors. So Eric, do you think that Holland will eventually get the job, or are you just holding out on Norris?
If he keeps pitching like this, he ain't getting the job anytime soon. What was he at? 7 walks and 2 1/3. That's
pretty good.
Yes, yeah, that's not how you get the job done. Norris has looked good. You know, he's actually, I was surprised. I know he's been pitching well, but I was looking at his numbers here. 9 1/3, 1 walk, 17 strikeouts. That really surprised me. So he's pitching very well. He's converted on all 4 of his save opportunities. I wasn't really, you know, it's funny, the guy I was highest on coming into the season, which I think I wasn't alone in this, was Dominic Leone. He hasn't really pitched too well. Got a 5.14 ERA, right? Though he does have 11 Ks and no walks. 7 innings, but, you know, higher ERA. And they got Holland. There's just a lot of guys in this pen. So I like Norris the most. I'm not too enthralled with him the rest of the way, but I do think he does lead the way for this team in saves if he continues to pitch well.
I'm pretty much 100% all in on Bud Norris. We saw him do this for 3/4 of the year last year, and it was his first year in the bullpen. So I think that the conversion to the role of bullpen guy has allowed his fastball to play up a lot more than it did in the past as a starter, and we're seeing the benefits of it. Holland kind of screwed himself over when he was so bad for that first start. I just think Norris is so good right now that there's no real reason to worry about any of the other guys unless there's an injury. If an injury happens, I think Holland probably gets the next opportunity if he starts to get it together. if barring that, I'm also still in on Dominic Leone. So maybe that's my third handcuff there. But it's Bud Norris all the way for me.
Yeah, Bud Norris here, but this is a head scratcher for me. And I think that they're going to try to give Holland every opportunity to win this job just to justify they're giving him $14 million this year. I don't really understand that. And one thing I did real, and the other thing is too, there's a ton of guys in that bullpen, you know, kind of like both of you alluded to, and there's a lot of moving pieces there. A lot of guys could step up and take that job. What I don't understand is why they gave Greg Holland this money when they have all those movable pieces. And maybe if they needed a closer close to the deadline, they could trade a prospect or something to get one. And just real quickly, just for fun, I was thinking about that $14 million that Holland is making. And he currently, because I compared it with other free agents that signed in this offseason, he's making more money than Jay Bruce, Todd Frazier, Gerard Dyson, Lance Lynn, and Mike Moustakas. And he's probably a mid-relief guy. So that really doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And he was signed, like, what, 2 days before the season started?
Yeah, and no spring training either. So, I mean, that's another thing, too. I mean, he's basically going through spring training right now.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. I would be holding on to both guys. I think eventually, like with Holland, especially with his firm stance, like, I will be the closer, which ended up not getting him signed until 2 days before the season. So I think that they will eventually try to work him in. But, you know, like you started off with, Erica, if he doesn't start pitching a little better, then that's just not going to happen. So you got to hold on to Bud Norris for the time being. But let's get into, my anecdote real quickly. So I was in one of Howard Bender's mock draft armies, which took place on RT Sports this year instead of on Fantrax. And I was in the chat with these other fine gentlemen, and we started talking about Brad Peacock. And it, for some reason, the chat room actually apparently bleeps out some bad words, and it actually bleeped out the middle part of Peacock.
Wow, that's amazing.
As a bad word.
Should have typed Astrocock. It would have let you do it.
It would have bleeped out the back part of it, but it was so funny. So, like, you know, that obviously once we caught on to that, it just devolved into a bunch of people swearing at each other in the chat room and just like cock in all caps. So that was a fun chat. So let's move. Speaking of which, let's move on to our next segment, which is called Premature Extrapolation. And this is just a little fun with numbers game. It's time to sort of take a step back from looking at your standings and everything. This is just kind of a reminder that things will normalize. These early numbers are ridiculous. Do not overreact. So we're going to kind of look at the on-pace numbers for some of these hot starters and try to debate where their true stat line actually lies and see if it differs at all from what we expected in draft season just a couple weeks ago. So the first guy that we're going to talk about here, and Van was kind enough to extrapolate all these numbers for us, and this is 150-game pace for all three of these guys. The first one is Starling Marte, who is on pace for a .306 average with 28 home runs, 46 steals, 140 runs scored, and just 65 RBI. So, Eric, have you changed your outlook on Starling Marte at all?
I have. I don't buy into that power at all. And I know it's still early, but he's ever had, I think he's only had three double-digit power seasons. So I think that's really where he sits, kind of in that, you know, 12 to 15 range where he usually is. Speed's legit. Average is legit. Runs, that's a little high, but, you know, that Pittsburgh lineup does have some decent hitters in it, so I can see him cracking 100 runs there. You know, since he does hit high, the National League lineup, you know, RBIs aren't going to be that bountiful, but I do like Marte. I've always kind of had a soft spot for him since he came up. Just really good, and with speed being, you know, not as, you know, plentiful as it used to be. He's got some added value for the fact that he can go out and get you 40 to 50 steals. Like, he had one season where he came pretty close. I think he had like 47 steals a couple of years back or something like that. So just the added speed bonus there, where he can be one of the top five stolen base threats in the league. Just gives him some added value right there.
I definitely buy into this. I mean, to an extent, obviously these are kind of crazy numbers, but I believe he's there, and I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I didn't get any shares of Marte. He scared me off enough that I just wasn't quite willing to pay the price. However, I think people that did pay the price are also going to get a decent amount of surplus. I think 15 to 20 home runs is pretty reasonable. 40 stolen bases is pretty much a lock as long as he plays all season. And I think the average is there. He's hitting 308 right now, and that's not egregious. He's got a 340 BABIP, so maybe it drops a little bit. But I think 290 to 300, definitely reasonable. So this is a guy that I really, really like. He's only 29, so I think we had a couple more really good seasons out of him. And the steroid scare of last year, I guess, is kind of in the rear view for him.
Yeah, I just like to see the health be there a little bit more throughout his career. He's played 150 games just once in his major league season, so I'd like to see that. I think pretty much everything can kind of stay around the projections. I think like Eric said, the power is not necessarily going to be at 28 homers. I think that maybe is a little closer estimate, 15 to 20. The RBI are not going to be there as well, but the runs scored, there's no reason that you can't get 40 steals out of him, and I think their average is going to be somewhere around 300 there. I just wonder how, you know, at the end of the year, how the Pirates offense is going to kind of shake out. But finally, at age 29, you know, kind of like we said, it's a little bit, I don't want to say a breakout, but it's kind of him showing what he is, his true colors are. It's just a matter of him not getting suspended or not getting injured and staying on the field and putting the numbers up. So everything except the power, I think, is pretty much legit in the RBIs.
Yeah, definitely going to be very valuable as far as stolen bases go in roto leagues. And he could be hitting third in that lineup more often than not. So I definitely believe into him being probably returning second round value so far this, come the end of the season, I guess I should say. So our next guy, Hanley, a.k.a. Handjob Ramirez, he is hitting 333. He's on pace for 34 home runs and 34 stolen bases, arriba, along with 115 runs and 173 RBI. So I'm sure he'll get there, right, Eric?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm really glad you guys put in Hanley Ramirez, me being a Red Sox fan. Hanley, what do I start with him? But
so are you going to say that these projections are a little low then?
Oh, of course, yeah. He's hitting 50-50. Okay. Right. But it's funny, you know, before the season, he made that claim that he wanted to go 30-30.
He did.
And I think everyone, you know, myself included, thought he was crazy. But, you know, he was, you know, a pretty good stolen base threat in his early days, but you know, he's definitely bulked up since then. But I can see him, was it 2014? He had 14 steals, 10 the year before that. So I think he can get double digits for steals. I think the power pace, not the 170 whatever RBIs, but I wrote a bold predictions article back in mid-February, had some fun with that, and I put him down, you know, he could mess around and have a 35-120 season. It was Alex Cora, the new manager in Boston, basically right away said that, you know, they need Hanley to be Hanley Ramirez. And so far he has, you know, he's got that 30 home run power, and, you know, they've been batting him mostly third. He's been batting second in the last few games. And I think he's motivated too, you know, with the new young manager in Cora. And he has that clause where if he gets over 500 at bats, he could think that $22 million vesting option, I believe it is, kicks in for next season. So, you know, he wants that. And, you know, if he's playing well, they're not going to bench him for Mitch Moreland. When everyone's like, oh, they're not going to let him get the 500 at bats. Now, if he's hitting, you know, well, like he is right now, they're not going to bench him. That'd be stupid. But yeah, I'm a very big believer in Hanley Ramirez. You know, just needs to stay on the field. That's always been his kind of thing the last few years. Can't seem to stay on the field. But you know, if he does, he's going to get, you know, Mookie and Benintendi, J.D. Martinez and all them hitting. You know, Pedroia will be back next month or so. So yeah, I'm all in on Hanley the rest of the way. I can see him. That bold prediction of 35-120, I think, is becoming more and more of a potential season-ending line for him.
And I do not like Hanley, but I really think the 2016 season is what you could be looking at here, where he went 640 plate appearances, 30 home runs, 9 steals, 286, 361, 505. No one's going to scoff at that. That's really good. If you drafted Hanley, you paid nothing for him, and if you get that, that's awesome. Great, good for you. I wasn't going to draft him. The injury risk is real. Right now, the BABIP is a little high, so I think the average is a little high, and he's walking less, so that's a little scarier. More importantly, and I know we're running a little long, but I want to say this. I don't even know if you know this, Nate. Do you know where the hand job nickname came from?
All I know is that it came from you. I don't exactly know where it
okay,
was
well,
birthed.
Years ago, in my first writing quote, spot, I guess. My friend had a website called sprayahen.com, and we would just write nonsensical baseball stuff. And one of my favorite things we did was player journals, where we would write from the perspective of a player. And I happen to enjoy writing from the perspective of Curt Schilling, everyone's least favorite racist. And I, at some point in the middle of an article where I was Curt Schilling, wrote about his truck, which he called the Silver Bullet, and referred to Hanley Ramirez as Handjob Ramirez, and thus a legend was born. So technically, okay, it came from Curt Schilling, not even me.
I don't know if I've ever heard anybody refer to as everyone's least favorite racist either. That's pretty good.
He's up there.
Yeah, he's got to be towards the top of that list, absolutely. Real quick, with Hanley Ramirez, the 30-30 thing, the last time he stole 30-plus bases was 2010, so I think it's a pretty safe bet we're not going to see that. I think we could see, you know, Van, you, I think you hit it on the head. The 2016 numbers are very, very good a representation of what we'll probably see. I think the average normalizes out to maybe about 280, 285. 30 homers, I think, can be there. I think the 100 RBIs can be there. He's just got to be on the field. And to kind of relate back to what Eric said about the contract with the 500 plate appearances, if we get 500 downloads, Van's vesting option for 2019 kicks in, and he'll be back as well. So we're shooting for that.
As long as I don't hit the DL with a throat disease or something. That's not even a good joke. That was horrible. That's yeah, like Jesse morbid. Blinker level bad joke.
Hey, that was all in fun. Throat disease is hardcore. You got to quit chewing that all at tobacco.
Well, I do love my chaw.
Okay. So last guy here in this segment is going to be AJ Pollock, who is hitting 273. He's on pace for 30 bombs and 40 steals with 90 runs scored and 120 RBI. Eric, have you changed your opinion on AJ Pollock since draft season?
Not really. You know, we talk about staying on the field being a key for, you know, Hanley Ramirez. You know, same thing here for Pollock. He only has one season of 500 plus at bats. That was his breakout year in 2015, where he almost went 20-40, missed that by one steal. The power, I'm buying into the power and speed. No reason why he couldn't do 20 and 40 again. I mean, last year, he had 425 at bats. He went 14 and 20. So, you know, the power speed is there. Average seems to fluctuate a bit. You know, he had a couple years over 300. Basically, every other year he's in like that 260 to 270 range. So I think average will be up, you know, the higher 200s here. He's striking out a little bit more than he's accustomed to so far. He's 18 Ks and 65 plate appearances. But you know, I don't trust him to stay healthy. You know, since that 2015 breakout, he had 41 at bats in 2016, and then only 425 last year. So, you know, he hasn't really been staying on the field that much. So, I don't have any shares of him. I potentially stayed away from him. I like him. I'm not saying he's a bad player. Like I said, I like these guys that have these power speed combinations, but, you know, I just don't trust him staying on the field.
I pretty much completely agree with everything you said. The biggest thing I'm going to point out is that strikeout rate, 27% right now. That's egregious and well above his career rate. So if there's something wrong there, then we could see a drastic fall off. However, if this is just a fluky small sample size thing and he does stay healthy, then the power speed is legit. As far as these three guys, I'm going to rank him Starling Marte as most likely to hit his numbers, AJ Pollock in the middle, and then Hanley is my number three. But I do like all three of these guys, so I'm probably not going to be trading for them because the cost is going to be insane, but the talent level's there for all three of them, and I think there's merit to what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't have much to add about AJ Pollock. I mean, it comes down to health. I think the only one that's not attainable on that list is there's no way he's getting 120 RBIs, and I think 30 homers is a little bit much. I would rank them probably Marte, Hanley, and Pollock last, and I put Pollock last just because of the injury risk.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that strikeout rate. That's actually, I mean, his contact rate is down substantially in the early going here. His swing and strike rate is actually up 4%, up to almost 11% so far. So, you know, he is hitting the ball harder than ever. Obviously, this is all really small sample size, but maybe he is making an effort to swing for the fences a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because I don't necessarily think that he should do that. And that would be part of his game. He should probably just rely on line drives and speed. But
real quick, could one say that strikeout rate is in fact too damn high?
Too damn high.
Too damn high. Egregious. Fantasy hubris.
Hubris. All right. So moving on to our next segment here. And in the essence of time, I think we will, Eric, I'll start with you with this first guy. Then Van, you can take the next guy. Ron, you can take the third guy. And we are moving on to the cold cut section. Some guys who have started off really, really poorly, as opposed to the premature extrapolation candidates that we just talked to. So, Eric, we'll throw this to you first. Randall Grichuk has gotten off to just an abysmal start. He's hitting just 102, 196, 265 with two bombs, one steal, four runs, five RBI, and 18 strikeouts versus just five walks. So you cutting bait on Randall Grichuk?
Yes, definitely am. I wasn't high on him going into the season. Never really been too high on him. He's kind of turning into one of those players that doesn't have as much value as, say, you know, 3-4 years ago, when, like, those guys that hit around, like, 240, 250 with, like, 20, 25 home run pop. You know, those guys are dime a dozen nowadays. You know, those are interchangeable pieces at the end of your bench, guys you can find off the waiver wire. He doesn't give you much speed. You know, he hasn't had the best track record of health either or performance. You know, he had 276 in 2015, but only 240 and 238 since then. Doesn't walk that much, has a bad K rate. Never been high on him, and his slow start is... if I had him on a team, I'd cut bait with him right now.
Yeah, that's looking like a pretty rough trade for the Jays to this point, although Leon hasn't necessarily been nails for the Cardinals. But, Van, we'll give this to you. It's your boy, Lewis Brinson. He's actually going to sit out for a few days to work on things in the batting cage because he is just off to a wretched start. 131 is his batting average, 185 OBP, 131 slug, so that's pretty great. Has not hit a homer. He's stolen one base, scored three runs. Drove in one RBI, 20 strikeouts, and just three walks. So are you cutting bait yet on Lewis Brinson, Van?
I am, sadly. And we know the strikeout rate is high, and it's always going to be high. I thought the walks would be better, and I could have foreseen a 240, 300 season where he provides you home runs and steals, which is really kind of what you're drafting for, and drafting him late. I don't see that happening now, and I think, unfortunately, we might be looking at maybe a Byron Buxton thing here where the talent level just doesn't come together until later on in the career. Maybe a Carlos Gomez type, when he gets to be 25, 26, 27, maybe then it comes together. So I'm not out as far as career, but for this season, yeah, I think you need to cut bait with Brinson because I just don't think it's there.
Yeah, it's tough. And he doesn't necessarily have, like what we talked about with Hanley Ramirez, even if he does fall off a little bit in terms of average and maybe power and speed, at least he's got a really good lineup around him to sort of buoy the runs and RBIs. You can't really say that with Lewis Brinson so much. So moving on to our last guy, Ron Encarnacion, Edwin Encarnacion, I guess I should say. He's hitting just 135, 237, 308. He's got three bombs, but he's got just four runs scored and four RBI with 17 strikeouts and five walks. He's a little bit of a notoriously slow starter. So do you think this is just another slow start for him, or has Father Time finally caught up with Edwin Encarnacion?
Okay, you kind of made a little bit of my argument, but what I want our listeners to do right now is I want them to put their ears up to their speaker because I'm going to tell them a secret. Okay, Edwin Encarnacion is a slow starter.
Go okay,
buy.
There we go.
Go get him now.
I'm creeped out. I'm okay. Very creeped out now.
That was creepier than that picture the Van sent earlier.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah. So go get him. We know he starts slow. He did this last year, ended with 38 homers, 100 RBIs, 258 average. You know the average is going to be like around that 260, 250 range. He hits in a good lineup. They're going to get it going. There's nobody really to challenge him. He has no position really. He plays in the field. He just has to stand there and hit the ball hard. And so I don't know, maybe if you can, this fluky weather that we've had in the Midwest, maybe that can be a little bit attributed to it, but he starts slow anyway. I'd like to try to get him in a couple of leagues. I don't really have any shares of him. I know he's 35. I don't think this is the year that he drops the ball and you see that big regression, but we know he's a power guy. We know he's not playing in the field. We know he does this. So I think he's a prime candidate. If you can pry him away from somebody for cheap, go do it now and you'll be glad you did later on.
Yeah, it's looking at his, this is just such a common thing. I think I freaked out about him for the last 3 or 4 years running. And just pulling up his 2017 April here, let's see, he hit 200, 35 strikeouts in 24 games. So, yeah, he'll come around. Don't sell low just yet. He might even be a pretty good buy low. So moving on to our last segment then, and we'll do the same thing. We'll just kind of go around the horn one at a time. So we'll give you the first guy here. And Eric, that is Franchi Cordero in our waiver wire segment. Are we picking up Franchi Cordero everywhere we can?
For now, yes. I wrote of him last week in my waiver wire. So
I wrote of him.
I wrote of him. I do like him. Good power speed guy. Always hit for a decent average, though he didn't quite have great play discipline. A little higher K rate, a little lower walk rate than you'd like. But the power speed is there, and he averaged like 35 steals for every 600 at bats in the minor leagues. Good 15 home run power there, too. The one thing that, Manny Margot is due back soon off the DL, and they also get Will Myers out there. Jose Perella's hitting over 300. So I just don't know going forward, how much Cordero plays. I still think he's going to be in the mix, but I can't see him getting more than, a few starts every week. He can play all the outfield positions, which helps, but there's too many bodies out there right now. So for right now, I'm adding Cordero. I've added him in a few leagues here. I got him in like three or four of my leagues, but it could be short-lived.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his, and I don't necessarily see Hunter Renfro as a huge roadblock. If it comes down to it, I would rather take Franchi, and he's got a lot of defense too and speed. So perhaps even if when Myers comes back and everybody's healthy again, maybe Cordero does get sent back down for a little bit. But I do think that I would hold on to him in deeper leagues because he's going to be back, baby. Just give it time. Hyunjin Ryu, Van, he has a 2.78 ERA over 15 and two-thirds innings, which is over the span of three starts, 19 strikeouts and six walks. Are you streaming Hyunjin Ryu moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just...
That is the proper response.
it's Hyunjin Ryu. He's performing now. Last year, he came back after the injuries and was very serviceable, although FIP really didn't like his work as much, but he did provide a 3.77 ERA. I think that's easily attainable. I don't think this under 3 ERA is really going to happen. I think the strikeouts are going to come down. But if he's healthy and he's pitching on a team that's really good, then sure, he's going to get you some value. So I'd throw him out there. He appears to be healthy, and maybe he gets, 25 to 30 starts again this season. But I'm just wary of the guy. Plus, there's always that risk of that ritualistic disembowelment if he struggles really badly. That's like 2 weeks in a row I brought that up. I had to do it.
Excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah. I was doing that two-start this article segment, whatever you want to call it, over at Razzball, and Ryu was a two-star guy this week, and I was just trying to figure out if I was going to say anything about him. Like, what do you say about him? You just give this shruggy face emoji. That's how you describe what he's going to do in any given start. Who the hell knows? He's as inconsistent as they come. So stream him while he's good, I guess, is what I would say. Ronald Guzman, we talked about him, Ron, on the recent Fantrax Dynasty Baseball episode where we talked about the top 10 Texas Rangers, and he is up. So are you picking him up and playing him all over the place?
I was able to pick him up in a couple of leagues and play him all over the place, but there's a few problems, and he kind of is going to have the same problem that our boy Franchi is going to have, is the fact that, as you alluded to earlier in the show, Delino DeShields is very close to coming back, and so they have Joey Gallo in left field right now, and so once he comes back, I think Gallo goes back to first base, and it just doesn't leave him a lot of at-bats because they're currently putting Shin-Soo Chu at DH, and so I don't know if he stays up when Gallo comes back up, but he's also... uncharacteristically at the major league level, striking out 42%. And so I don't think that that's going to do him any favors either. However, he is hitting 278. He does have a homer. He's knocked in some runs, but he's got 8 strikeouts to 1 walk. So until he learns to walk, I don't necessarily think that they're going to have a huge need for him to be up, especially like you said, with DeShields coming back as quick. So I think he's a nice piece you can add now. I wouldn't spend a whole lot of my fab money on him unless you have a decent sized bench that you can stash him. But I just don't see where he's going to get the at bats from once DeShields comes back and Gallo moves back to first.
Yeah, I agree. I think his time with the Rangers will be short lived. So, Eric, we'll go back to you on this one. Nick Tropiano, what do you think about him? He had a pretty good start earlier on in the season.
He did. I'm not 100% sold on him quite yet. He's pitched fairly well throughout his career, but hasn't really had any long, he's only had, 25 starts now in his career. He's already 27, missed the entire 2017 season, didn't pitch at all. So, I don't know. I'm kind of in a wait and see mode with him. His walk rate usually is a little too high. Does strike out a good amount of guys. He's always been kind of right around 8 to 9 Ks per nine, which is pretty good. Gets a little too hittable. So I'm just in wait and see mode. Yeah, I might stream him, you know, if the matchup's right, but that's all he is for me right now. I'm not like in a rush to go and pick him up just after that one start, even though it was very good start. 6 2/3 scoreless with 6 Ks, but just streamer territory for me right now.
Very good. All right, I'll let you tech onto that, Van, and then also, you know, since you're the Angels fan, you follow that team rather closely. So if you have anything to add on Tropiano, and then also Vincent Velasquez, who pitched this very night, tossed a quality start, and he's been very good through 3 starts himself.
He has. Tropiano, I'll just say, is a better real-life pitcher right now. I don't really trust him a lot in fantasy, but I think he could really give the Angels a boost that they need because they need some of these guys to get innings because it's such a patchwork rotation. And I think he can provide that TJ surgery, and he appears to be pitching to the level he was prior to going down with injury. So I like him. Velasquez, I'm going to give him like maybe 3 or 4 more starts where I think he's going to be really good, particularly if it's against weak opponents. But then I think he's going to go down that same road he always does, where he tires out the third time through the lineup. He starts getting hit a lot harder. I still believe he's a bullpen arm. I think they're going to try and use him as a starter as much as they can. I just don't think it's going to work out in the long run. However, right now it is. So DFS, my fantasy leagues, you know, I'm going to put him out there for at least the next couple of starts until I start seeing those signs of him falter. But definitely worth watching for that. But right now, he sure is performing.
I actually did pick him up. I believe it was in the TGBFI, FBI, whatever that acronym is.
it does KOTB.
Yeah, he does intrigue me a little bit. His pitch mix has been altered a little bit. He's throwing more curves and sliders and less changeups, so maybe that will continue to work a little bit better for him. Obviously, we know the command has been an issue with him in the past, however, but I'm willing to give him a shot in a couple different leagues. He's always had that potential that I've just been dreaming on, and I had him in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League for a while. I've since given up on him. But
got him from me.
Oh, that is where I got it from. There you go. Well, he's with somebody else now. I don't even know who. But I drooled over him for a while, and he didn't do a damn thing, so I had to cut bait eventually. But that's going to wrap us up. Eric Cross, thank you so much for joining us here on the Nasty Cast this week. Before we get out of here, go ahead and plug anything and everything you're working on. You got coming out in the coming weeks.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a blast, and I always love talking some baseball here. Yeah, I was working on my normal weekly stuff here. I have a Dynasty piece that comes out on Tuesdays on Fantrax. So I've been focusing on some lesser-known prospects that are kind of on the rise. Already covered infield and outfield the last 2 weeks. Got pitching coming up next week, and which that'll be headlined by one of my favorite, Shane Bieber. So look out for that
Bieber
next
fever.
Week. Bieber fever, that's right. Also, I had a chance to go watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette play in New Hampshire last weekend, and hoping to get down to Pawtucket this weekend when the Gwinnett Braves are in town.
Let me just ask you, how many pairs of underwear did you bring with you to that Vlad Guerrero game?
A lot, less than I should have, because it was freaking cold. My wife sat there with it through me. She, you know, did a little bit bitching, but it was like, I think it was like 40 degrees at first pitch, and it just got worse from there. I actually went and bought a blanket from the team store to throw over our legs, but it was Kobe. I was thoroughly impressed. He 2 for 3, a couple RBIs, hit a opposite field line drive missile off the right field wall on an outside fastball. Might have gotten out if it was like 60 degrees out. Thoroughly impressed there. And then I'm hoping to see Acuna this weekend. Should still be in AAA, unfortunately, but good for me is I'll hopefully be able to go watch him. I might meet up with Ralph Lifshitz too. He's going to the game. Might either be a Mike Soroka start or a Luis Gohara rehab start, so hopefully get one of those two on Sunday. So got that going on. Weekly waiver wire articles on Fridays, and another minor league report that I write each week for Fantasy Pros.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your obviously busy schedule to join us on the Nasty Cast. I was going to book a guest for next week, and I have failed to do so at this point, so I can't tell you who might be on next week's show. It'd be a surprise. But until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.